dear listeners, and yes, can you believe it? It's another week of the podcast. Sometimes I can't believe how fast time is flying by, but here we are. It's Sunday and episode 135. This week, I interviewed my friend Michael Mao, and I met him about 4 years ago when another podcast, which I helped produce, Derelict, we brought all the actors together to Santa Fe, and we had such a fun week recording, eating together, getting to know each other, and in general, just having a really great time. I've been watching with excitement since then, as Michael has appeared in multiple films, as well as launched his own podcast, A Blind Play of Social Forces. I'm just going to read a little bit about Michael so you can kind of know who he is before we get into the good stuff. Michael Mao is an actor, writer, and visual artist. Michael has voiced characters in 5 narrative podcasts: Big Sandy, the sci-fi thrillers Fathom and Derelict, and the supernatural historical dramas Haints and Between the Devil. His short fiction has appeared in Black Warrior Review, Portland Review, Fifth Wednesday, Mount Hope, Firewords Quarterly, Punchnulls, Ferocious Quarterly, and other places. He's had so much success as a writer that it only makes sense that he has created his own podcast, in which many of the episodes are based on fiction that Michael has written. He's also an artist and a model, and received his MFA from the Bluegrass Writers Studio at EKU. You can visit him at michaelmao.org, and there will be a link to that site under the Treasures page of the website, or at Instagram at TheMichaelMao. Michael is hilarious, intelligent, and doesn't take himself too seriously. And for all of these attributes, I really, really appreciate him. So now, episode 135 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
And because we are all alive as a result of energy that flows through things, call it the force, call it whatever you want. But I mean, we've literally, energy is shooting through our bodies so that we can move these meat puppets. That energy connects everything from the tiniest little quark to the, the whatever, galaxies and beyond. And if we're all connected and we're all made of the same thing, then we are the same thing. And in that way, we're perfect.
Who are you as a human being? How do you self-describe? If you were to go to a party or a conference and you had to introduce yourself to a group of people, who are you?
First off, I am terrible at parties and conferences. I have such social anxiety that I have to spend a lot of time psyching myself up and actually having practice conversations with people that in my imagination almost always go off the rails. And I have to just work up a lot of strength to enter into a conversation with a stranger. So in that regard, to a person just meeting me, I probably seem distant, eccentric, and or maybe snobby. I tend to have a look on my face of consternation. And I, apparently it's off-putting and or makes people feel like I'm judging them. And really, it's just me going, don't screw this up, don't screw this up, don't screw this up. That's who I am. I am an overthinker all the time.
I mean, it is nerve-wracking meeting new people. And also, for me, sometimes terrifying.
you know, I hate going to events by myself so that I, you know, have someone at least to go with. I am going to a wedding this weekend and my quote unquote date, who's really a good friend, just told me he has to go to another wedding. So he's only going to be there for a little bit. And all I can think about is, oh my God, now I'm going to have to talk to people that I don't know and like be alone. It is terrifying to be in any social situation where you don't know people, but then you have to make small talk. One of the things I hate most in this world is small talk. I think it is so boring. And like, I can feel the energy in my body being sucked away, like siphoned away as I'm trying to either make myself relevant or trying to help the person I'm talking to sound relevant. It is like an exhausting ordeal.
Being in the entertainment industry, I am also very aware in any social situation that, and I may be projecting this, that if people are coming to talk to me, they want something from me. They want to try to exploit something that I have. And or they're trying to feel me out to see if I'm important enough for them. I found that at film festivals. I found that just recently I attended a conference for podcasters. Now, there were a ton of wonderful people that I met. Don't get me wrong. But oftentimes I'll see the conversation going in this direction where it's like, they want to know who I am, how important I am, and whether or not being associated with me is going to help them to grow their brand or whatever it is we have to do nowadays.
You are so right. I think those things are exhausting too. And it's a shame that so many people are just completely motivated on making connections that will get them ahead. And they're completely missing the point of meeting strangers and having conversations, because who knows, you could build a friendship, or maybe in 2 years, the relationship will bear fruit according to your standards. But so right. Many people are, you know, the hustle, it's like 24/7, the hustle. Will this person get me ahead? Will they make me famous?
I don't know the answer. I'm hyper aware of that phenomenon, and I try not to put off some vibe that I want to just use someone else as a ladder. But maybe that is just the way the industry that I'm in now works. You know, it used to be when I was teaching and I was having conversations with parents or students, inevitably I would end up being their counselor. So this is such a different relationship. It's just total paradigm shift in how humans interact.
You're totally right. And the only reason I'm talking to you and want to be friends with you is so that I can use you at a future date.
Thank you for
Heads
being
up.
Honest with me.
Heads up.
Yeah. And you know, there are sometimes I would love to be used as an actor or a writer or whatever. Please use me, pay me an appropriate rate, but hey, I like being used.
You've done some really interesting work. Obviously, I initially met you because you voiced one of the characters for the podcast Derelict. And that's how I initially met you. But then over the years, 4 years, it's been really fun seeing all the other stuff that you've done, which, you know, includes this amazing podcast that you've created, and which has your own creations, your own writing, but you recently just had a contest to bring other writers and creators in. I think you've done, I mean, you're a model. Aren't you a model? You're a model too, right?
I am. I do that. Yes.
Yeah. And then of course you're an actor. I mean, and yeah, so you do a lot of different stuff and you're involved in a lot of great creative stuff besides for being an author, right? You've been published in multiple places. You kind of do it all.
I have a hard time sitting still. It's something I inherited from my father, who, despite the fact that he has either been on crutches or in a wheelchair his entire life, never stops moving, never stops doing. And that, I inherited that from him, for better or worse. So when I have moments of downtime, I don't know what to do with myself. And I'm just built to think creatively about turning some interaction, some experience into writing, into a short story or a narrative of some sort. And then, oh, well, now I have that. Why don't we hire people to perform it as an audio play? And hey, you know what? While we're at it, I mean, I may as well write a screenplay. And I mean, I guess I can act in it too. Not that it always works like that. But I feel like time seems to move so quickly that there are so many things that I want to do. Not necessarily accomplish or be successful at, because I'm not sure I truly understand those terms, but to just do them, to paint something, to, I don't know. I mean, that was a moment of my life when I spent a lot of time doing murals, which have nothing to do with the writing and the acting and the modeling. It's in me, and I got to get it out, and I get distracted easily by other things. So I'm just like, all right, let's do this, and let's do this, and let's do this.
You're like annoyingly prolific.
Well, or I'm a jack of all trades, master of none.
See, that's you saying that with love, and I chose other language. So thank you. Thank you for.
And, you know, in terms of, I mentioned having to be brave when in a social situation, but I also, I submit my work, whether it's writing or, you know, short films, audio, whatever, I submit it to festivals, to competitions. I send it out for people to read, and I get rejected all the time, constantly. As an actor, I audition for things all the time and get rejected. So I think maybe I'm part of it is I need to balance it. Eventually it's like, I don't know, maybe it's like being in Vegas, you know? The more you gamble, the more you win. Is that how that works? I can't remember how slot machines go. But you see a prolific creator, and I see someone who is trying to eventually get his work accepted by an audience, because it's, I don't know, it's important for me to share it. I have pulled over the car. I've stopped mowing the lawn. I will stop in the middle of a dozen different tasks in order to write something down, record something so that I don't lose it. Yeah. I mean, I didn't bring it into the studio with me, but I do have a monkey that typically lives on my back. On the set of Friends, and it was weird. They were giving it away.
Wait, what? What?
Yeah. Yeah, when the show Friends ended, this is years ago, they had a monkey. It was a character, and I am pulling your leg, but Ross had a pet monkey.
I can't believe I'm so naive. I'm gullible. How about that? I'm very gullible.
It's okay. So you just believe in wonder and stories.
It's true.
I I grew up in a household that was socially religious. When my parents were still married, so my father was Catholic. He grew up Catholic. And so as a young boy, when we were living outside of Chicago, I would go to mass with my grandma. And that was my first church experience. And it was painful to sit through a Catholic mass with your grandma constantly pinching you to stay awake. But my parents, we went to a Methodist church at some point. We moved to Birmingham. And I think it was just for social reasons for my mother. She didn't ever seem to be, we didn't do Methodism other than when we were at my grandmother's house, we would say the blessing. My grandmother was a Methodist. My parents were married in a Methodist church, but it was just so that my mom had people to hang out with, I think. And she is an atheist. So, you know, I didn't know that. And she didn't admit that to me until I was a full grown adult. But even after my parents got divorced and my mom married my stepfather, we continued going to Methodist church every Sunday. I went to Methodist Youth Fellowship on Wednesdays. My mother was my confirmation teacher. And all this time, she doesn't even believe in God. And I'm just, my concept of church is you get to hang out with your friends and then you get to go to McDonald's. So win-win.
But I don't think you don't go to church now, do you?
I do not. I got away from going to church as soon as I graduated from high school. There was a period in college when I had a group of friends a couple of whom were Pentecostal, and I attended church with them. I didn't feel a sense of community. I felt a very strict dichotomy between people who were going to hell and people who were going to heaven. And I think that experience really got me thinking about, specifically about the Christian religion and the bastardization of Christian, you know, messages, Christian thought, the idea of community and fellowship and you know, helping one another seemed to be completely ignored. And this idea that that if you didn't do something a certain way or believe a certain way, then you would have a lifetime of burning in fires of hell. I just couldn't buy into that. I couldn't buy into the thought that I would spend my whole life feeling guilty because I'm not good enough. So I looked for other places. I looked for ways to see humanity and all life, all matter, for that matter, to see how it could all be connected and supporting one another and living as this one infinitely expanding universal organism. And that, to me, at least, and maybe I just haven't found it, doesn't exist within any prescribed religious doctrine.
Well, I would love to hear any stories that you'd like to tell about anything magical, whatever you'd like to share. I'd love to hear it.
I don't know that I necessarily, maybe a story will come out of this, but in the way that I try to experience the world I live in is, all right, maybe there's a minor story. So as an English teacher, I used to teach the novel Grendel by John Gardner. And on its surface, it is just a retelling of the Beowulf epic poem from the point of view of the monster, Grendel. But it is really a history of human thought, philosophy, religion, all as seen through the eyes of a creature who is both completely naive and open, but is seen as a monster. And at some point in the novel, chapter 5 to be exact, Grendel meets this character, the dragon. We all know that in folklore, in fantasy, dragons tend to be, you know, they hoard gold and they burn things with fire. And of course, in the Christian religion, they are serpents, and we know what serpents do. They trick people with the truth. And I can explain that more later if you want. But the dragon tells Grendel that humans only think they think. That they see something happen over 100 years, over 500 years. They experience this thing in their history and they think that's the way it is. And whether that's science or, you know, human behavior. And the dragon says, it's just a flicker flash. They think that if they make it over, they run across a spider web, and they think that if they make it once, that's the way it is. They will always be able to make it. But dragons we see from the mountaintop. And he talks about seeing all time and space and being able to see from the infinitesimal vibrating strings to the, you know, enormity of this ever-expanding universe. And each and all of that throughout geologic time. And these things that we think are so important, these beliefs that we have that could never change, these solid facts over billions of years in this multiverse are always proven wrong somewhere, sometime. And so the only thing we can really know for sure is that we just don't know anything. If we don't know everything, and we can't know everything. But the dragon is a deceiver, right? And so we hear these thoughts, and for some people it makes sense. You're like, oh, well, then I'll just be a nihilist. I won't believe in anything. But that's the trick of the serpent, is to overwhelm you and make you feel worthless. And so that becomes your lot in life. But from my point of view, so you have electrons and protons and neutrons in these atoms that make up cells, that make up tissues, that make up organs, that are part of systems, that are part of bodies. And these bodies are part of communities, that are part of systems, that are part of countries, that are part of this world, that, and it just ever expands. And so in that way, and because we are all made of matter, and because we are all alive as a result of energy that flows through things, call it the force, call it whatever you want. But I mean, we've literally, energy is shooting through our bodies so we can move these meat puppets. That energy connects everything from the tiniest little quark to the, you know, the whatever, galaxies and beyond. And if we're all connected, and we're all made of the same thing, then we are the same thing. And in that way, we're perfect. But that's not really a story with a beginning, middle, and an end. That's just me spouting off. I don't know.
I was going to say, saying something beautiful. I love that you brought in the book Grendel, because I read it so long ago. And what always really affected me about that story was how lonely he was. And what, you know, being designated the monster, being designated the other, being designated an abomination, just how misunderstood he was and lonely. And it really helped me to, I mean, it really helped frame the story, the Beowulf story, in another way for me, in a deeper way.
Yeah.
Always been like a staunch champion and defender of those who are bullied or those who are considered other. I don't know what it is inside me, but I can't stop. And that book just about broke my heart.
The book shares again through the dragon the idea that humans need, or we think we need, heroes. And we think we need heroes because monsters exist. And the dragon tells Grendel, you have to exist for them. You are the thing that makes them grow, that makes them think, that makes them create. They write songs about you. They build stronger walls because of you. They make their weapons cooler because of you. You are what makes humans advance. And the hero then comes in and makes humans feel protected.
That is a
We need our gods and monsters.
Right, right. I was going to say that's a really tough role to play. You know, I always think about, I'm going to go deep here. Okay. You ready? You ready?
Yeah.
I mean, you could totally apply that to Judas, you know, bestowing the kiss that betrays Christ in the garden. And, you know, without Judas, then the story doesn't move forward. You know, the guards aren't able to recognize who's this guy that's like this prophet that we have to take into custody. Without Judas, really, Jesus isn't able to live into his, into his role of, you know, crucifixion and saving everyone. And so I've always kind of had a soft spot for Judas as well, because I've always thought to myself, you know, what if Judas didn't want to do that? What if Judas was like, I love Jesus, I don't want to do this, but God came to Judas and was like, look, you got to do me this solid, okay? Like, for this salvation to come to mankind, there needs to be a scapegoat. There needs to be a monster that everyone can blame. Just like Eve, right? In the Garden of Eden.
Right. The serpent comes in, tells Eve the truth. If you eat of this tree, it's going to make you like a god. And, I mean, she's not wrong. She got a whole bunch of knowledge from that, and it's pretty godlike. In order for humanity to become what it has been, you got to get kicked out of the garden. You need that serpent or the Judas or any story from the Judeo-Christian tradition. Mm-hmm. The flood.
No, totally. I was just thinking, it's such a shame that we need quote unquote bad guys to like move us forward as a species or to facilitate intellectual or emotional growth or what have you. You know, it's just, it's kind of, I don't know. I mean,
but they are the blunt force. They are the hurricane, the tornado, the volcano, the whatever it is, the tiger that stalks the village. So in that way, this bad guy or this evil character, I mean, they're just part of who we are as a giant organism.
Well, I think what you're saying is we need them.
Yeah.
I mean, without all these, you know, scapegoats and monsters, we'd kind of be stuck, I guess. And by the end, little Grendel like captured my heart. So I feel so sorry for him.
As well you should.
Poor guy.
Or think killed by a hero.
Yeah, I know. And I guess we'll always need heroes, right? I mean, I don't know why we all, it's just every story, of course, that we've told. I'm sure in your podcast episodes, there are heroes, right? You need them. You need to have the audience.
Are there? Oh, I don't know that I have a hero in, oh boy, I don't know. I'm thinking through each one. I definitely have people making choices.
Are there monsters?
There are some monstrous behaviors. So I'll give you an example. There's an episode called Little Bird. It's from season one. Season one is almost all about children. And it's based on a short story that I published years ago in the Black Warrior Review. And Little Bird follows the daughter of a, I can't remember what his rank is, but he's a high ranking military officer. And he, as a single father, has trained his daughter in enhanced interrogation in order to protect her. So he's taught her how to put up with torture, with, you know, whether it's waterboarding or, you know, stress positions, what have you, going without food. And that is a monstrous thing to do to a child. Yet he does it out of love. Now, I'm not condoning it. Again, terrible thing. It is child abuse. And the result in the story is fairly devastating. Now, but also in the story, there is a chubby little boy who's a friend of this girl, and he makes a heroic choice, but he does so out of fear. And if there is a hero in the story, someone who stops things from getting worse, it's this little boy. They don't walk away and have Princess Leia put medals on their chest or anything like that. The world goes on. And I think all of my stories have some bit of heroism in that people make difficult decisions in order to stop something from getting worse. But a lot of them have people making bad decisions in order to somehow protect themselves. And I think that is more realistic than a hero story than anything that Marvel, obviously Marvel's not realistic, but you know, we have these stories, whether it's Beowulf or, you know, Odysseus or any other of these single strong men who come in and brave things and destroy monsters and save people who can't protect themselves. But in the real world we live in, we individuals often work together to protect ourselves and to be in community. And it's oftentimes the hero figure, prevents that from happening.
That's fascinating. I hadn't thought of it that way before. Something else to chew on now after our conversation has ended. Thank you.
It wasn't until I was well into working with actors on this podcast series and putting the stories together in some order that I even realized that my work has a through line, has these themes that connect it all together. And that's when I even came up with the title for the podcast, which is the title of one of the episodes. And I only bring that up because I think it's important based on what we've been talking about. The title, A Blind Play of Social Forces, comes from a quote from Richard Wright's native son. He writes, they hate because they fear, and they fear because they feel that the deepest feelings of their lives are being assaulted and outraged, and they do not know why. They are powerless pawns in a blind play of social forces. And I use that for the title of one of the stories about a social studies teacher whose own bigotry pushes a little boy in his class to beat up one of his Muslim classmates. And the teacher's own, you know, teaching style is based on this, is based on fear. He hates because he fears, and he fears because he feels like these beliefs are being assaulted, and he doesn't understand it. In each of my stories, whether published or not, or whether in the podcast or not, I find that I write again and again about how people cope with fear. Fear of love, fear of success, fear of just making simple human choices. And oftentimes, especially with men and children, fear shows itself in the form of anger and hate. So I have a lot of characters dealing with fears and making decisions based on that, and trying to grow themselves and trying to find connections, and oftentimes struggling even more because they can't let go of their fears.
I mean, I would say I love that, but I think it would be the inappropriate thing to say.
It makes me realize that I think for some people it's probably a hard listen, mm-hmm. Especially if you're listening to one after the other, because while I see optimistic endings. I mean, I have an episode where there's a very good chance that the characters commit suicide at the end. It's not necessarily the case, but it certainly could be interpreted that way. But I like to see everything I write as having choices even after that last word, after that last period, that there is still hope in these people's lives. Because we are all living in a universe that is perfect. So things will work out in the end. And if they're not working themselves out, well, then it's not the end.
I bet you did not expect the conversation this week to be about monsters and heroes, but here we are. I never know what my guests are going to say or what kind of topic or conversation they're going to bring up, but obviously what Michael brought up clearly resonated with me. I need to thank Michael for agreeing to be on the podcast and for all the interesting and evocative work he's doing in the world. It's not easy putting yourself out there, and Michael seems to do it with such grace and such aplomb. He's a really good model for me, actually, because I really shy away from putting myself out there, but watching Michael do it gives me a little more bravery. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode: Justin Allen Arnold, Taiga Sound Productions, Frank Schroeder, and Stephen O'Brien. For complete attribution, please see the Bite-Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to Michael's website, other artists and writers, playlists, and cool things I hope lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Please do not pass go and write a review or leave a rating for the podcast. We creators, including Michael, are always looking for more ratings and more reviews so that other people find us. There will be a link to Michael's podcast, A Blind Play of Social Forces, under the episode's show notes. As he stated in the podcast, his work is a little intense. It might be difficult to listen to, but I think you'll get an idea of how Michael's mind works and the level of creativity that he's working with. Hint, it's immense. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Michael. Put yourself out there. Take a risk. I know it's scary. I just admitted it's scary for me, but you never know. If you don't put yourself out there, you're not even putting yourself in the race. So be brave. Don't care what others think about you. Believe in your own work. Put yourself out there, just knowing that your bravery and your fortitude and your belief in yourself will make this world a shinier place.
Okay, there you go. You just gave me the perfect ending for the podcast. Look at that. It's like you're like a creator or something, or someone who works with words, or like knows what to say and like how to have that perfect like send off. So thank you.
Once again, you are welcome.
It's like, you know what you're doing. It's so weird.
Yeah. Well, it's all an accident.
Is it? Oh my gosh.
That's what the dragon says in Grendel. Everything's an accident.
And that's like a whole other conversation, isn't it? I don't like that sentiment, but I suppose some things are accident. I don't know. That book was so good. Thank you for bringing it in, because I haven't thought of it for years. And it really moved me when I read it. It's such a powerful story, but I've always been like drawn to the people who are the scapegoats or the who are considered the monsters in general. Yeah. I don't know why.